Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, Fred Obiero.
Hello, and welcome to the Ivy Podcast. My guest today is Sam Alcobi. He is the head of sales at Practice Panther. Thanks for joining us, Sam.
Thanks for having me, Fred. Super excited to be here with you today.
Great. Before we start this episode, I have one small request to our listeners. As we continue to grow the Ivy Podcast, we will greatly appreciate it if you would just take a minute of your time to leave us a review on the show, because reviews make a huge difference to podcast channels like ours. Now, time for the episode with Sam. So Sam, why don't you tell us a bit about yourself, your background, and your role at Practice Panther?
Sure, Fred. So I was actually born in Philadelphia. My family moved to Miami when I was about five, so I really grew up here in Miami. One of the biggest influences in my life was my grandfather. He was actually the executive director for the Holocaust Education Commission in New Jersey. So he devoted his whole life to fighting intolerance, fighting hate, fighting prejudice, and really educating people on genocide. So a lot of his values were instilled with me growing up, you know, kind of like the things of being kind and not judging someone by the color of their skin or their racial character, anything like that. And again, a lot of that has always been instilled in me and how I approach life. And as I got older and grew older, you know, I come from a family of educators. Like I said, he was a doctor in education. My mother's a teacher. A lot of teachers in my family, but he, for some reason, always knew that I, Sam, wasn't going to be in the classroom growing up. And even with that and a lot of his guidance around my life, it kind of propelled me to get into what I got to today. So it really started when I was around 20 years old. I got into property management. Then I did some digital and media marketing. And eventually I landed a sales job with Practice Panther. So real quick, Practice Panther is pretty much a case management program for attorneys. So think of it as like the backbone of a law firm where they enter their time and everything. So I was one of the founding employees, and I've been here for now 6 years. One acquisition later, we got acquired by a private equity firm. And, you know, after I started here as a founding employee, I kind of progressed up the ladder and, you know, to where I am today as the head of sales at Practice Panther, and really looking forward to, you know, what's coming next in my life here, you know, with the company and where I'm going forward.
Great. Quick follow-up. So you said you guys got acquired. Was there anything that changed from how your business operated from before the acquisition to post-acquisition?
Yeah, I think, you know, some of the normal trends from a startup life, you know, as one of the first 3 to 4 employees in an office, I kind of had the many hats of wearing and doing everything. So once you get acquired and there's more, you know, marketing money, more funds to go into the separate departments, more departments are being created, you get a little bit more organized. There's a lot more structure to the corporate level of things like that, which has been a huge resource to Practice Panther and everything that we've been able to do and accomplish. So even though I started as a founding employee and we really had just such exponential growth to get to where we got to when we got acquired, but even after the acquisition, just more of the, like I said, structure and organization within the company has really propelled us to become one of the leaders in our industry.
Perfect. So you've worked in the brand development and real estate industries in the past. What are some of the parallels from those professions that can help make someone a stronger salesperson? Please share any examples that you may have.
Yeah, that's a great question. I would say as far as brand development, I mean, it kind of speaks for itself, right? Understanding your product and really what the needs of that end user may be. So for example, I was at a digital media marketing company and we threw something called College Fest, where we would go out to these college campuses or throw like a huge convention in a convention center with all the college kids that would come from the different schools in the surrounding areas. And you were handing out, you know, different types of water bottles and swag and things like that. So really understanding the product, the use for it, and how it pertains to the end user is obviously something you need to know in sales. And how that kind of correlates with real estate. Real estate, I'm sure a lot of people have, you know, whether you're an investor or selling or just an agent or whatever it may be, real estate is really something that you have to be flexible in and really adaptable, because there's so many curveballs and really unforeseen situations. So I think these two things and those two professions that I've had in the past allows me and other salespeople, if they want to take anything from this, is really to just be on top of your game at all times, right? So again, another example is maybe like the value of a product, right? So if I have one product and there's a competitor and someone I'm selling to tells me, oh, the competitor is offering it for less money, you don't have to go back and offer for less money. You just want to prevent the value of your product. So whether it's like a house in real estate or a piece of software or in the technology industry, proving that value and really exuding the confidence in it is always going to show that client that's purchasing it, you know, why you and your product is that right choice.
Sam, I got to ask you this. Last year we had COVID-19 pandemic. A lot of companies went to full scale work from home. How was the sales industry impacted? Because everybody talks about sales being a high touch kind of service. How were operations impacted, and what did you guys do at Practice Panther to overcome that big challenge?
Sure. So, you know, there's so many sales positions and different companies and the way you sell it and whatnot. I think a lot of companies were affected tremendously. I think other companies somehow benefited from it. I think we were kind of one of the industries where you did benefit, because a lot of lawyers, when they go to the office every day and they're working in their law firms and they're adding time to their programs or writing it on Excel sheets or whatnot, now they're working from home and they need a product to be able to communicate with their colleagues and with their partners and things like that. And that's the type of program we have and are able to sell. So behind just being able to work remotely, I think it was going to get there eventually, where, you know, the majority of law firms are going to have to adopt some sort of technology like Practice Panther or one of its competitors. But I think this kind of just was the catalyst to make that happen and was a lot faster. So selling it, you know, as much as you want to be in front of the client and meet with them or go out for a lunch or whatnot, there's so much technology out there like Zoom itself that just allows you to have some sort of personal touch. And if you were, again, in any type of industry selling, I think there are a lot of tools that you could still benefit from to be able to make that sale or, you know, create that connection with the end client.
This just segues to my next question, which was having to do with technology in the legal industry. What are some of the recent trends that you are researching in this space that will transform how technology helps law firms in their operations in the near future?
Yeah, so a lot of that probably, you know, like I said, it goes around remote work itself, being able to communicate with people outside of your office or even the clients themselves, but it's also being able to bill on the go, right? If I'm an attorney and I have my phone in my hand with everything, you know, having an app nowadays, you want to be able to bill from there to automate a lot of what you're doing. So if you're an attorney, or really think about any type of business that has repetitive documents, for example, if I need to send, you know, you a document, Fred, but I already have a client that I sent it to previously, and I just need to change your name or your rate, you know, there are tools now within programs like Practice Panther that allow you to automate a lot of this stuff. Even things as simple as intake forms on your website. If I type in, you know, best podcast host and Fred comes up on a website and I want to put my information to contact Fred, the technology now is going to take that information right from the website and put it to an email to your phone. And you know, hey, this guy Sam just signed up on my website, let me give him a call. So lawyers now can do that with things like intake forms that are electronically driven. And the biggest thing also is e-signatures. I mean, you have your DocuSigns, your Adobes, HelloSigns, all of these things. But if you have that native to a program and you're an attorney or a doctor or really, you know, in a lot of different spaces, that really gives you a step ahead of your competition, in addition to obviously getting paid online. I think if you're going to take anything away from technology and how it's being driven in today's world, you want to get paid online instead of having to wait for a potential client to come to your office and you write you a check. Hopefully there's funds, you know, giving the ability to put in a credit card payment online and getting paid electronically is something I can't preach enough about.
One thing that I want to follow up with you on is change management, especially in the legal industry, where a lot of people would argue technology has not been widespread. How do you overcome change management where you find law firms that don't want to change how they've done operations for the last 60, 70 years, and now we are facing a situation where everything has to be digitized? How do you overcome that? How do you help them see the benefits of, you know, embracing technology, embracing change? Because there's a lot of people that are very change averse.
Yeah, no, you bring up an excellent point. I mean, you said it, you know, so many law firms are very antiquated, you know, and it's one of the few industries that's taking a little bit slower to adopt so much technology. But I think it's so important that they eventually do, because like you said, you know, there are law firms 50, 60, 100 years of history of business, and things are always being ran the same way. So now it's our job to go there and speak to these attorneys or to have conferences with them and explain to them how everything is changing with the technology. And I think the biggest asset behind it is not just some of the stuff I previously talked about, you know, the automation aspects and, you know, a lot of the electronically driven, pieces of technology, but really just all of those things coming together and allowing you to do a lot more in less time, which in turn is going to make them more money. Because if you're saving time and now I can allocate that time to another client or case, then it's almost a no-brainer for a lot of law firms. You know, when I started in this industry, the market penetration of legal technology services to these law firms was so minute. It was tiny. And here I am 5, 6 years later, and it's just continuing to grow at a much more rapid pace than we've ever seen it. And there's still so much more room for that market penetration. So you really do get a good idea of how much these law firms are starting to adopt it. And as you talk to more and more, they're understanding that value and speaking with other law firms and really getting a good feel for why this is really the move moving forward.
So I like doing my research before I have guests on for the podcast episode. Mm-hmm. And as I was doing that before this episode, I came across alternative legal service providers and how mm-hmm. they're starting to reshape the legal industry by providing more efficient to routine legal services. What are some of the challenges in your eyes that face such a model versus a traditional legal practice?
Yeah, so it's going to really tie back to a lot of what we're talking about already, right? It's the adoption of it all. If you're, again, one of these firms with 50 years of doing the same things the same way, and you know the main partner owner has been so successful at running it that way, but now there's all these new legal service providers, whether it's like document review, contract management, or even like e-discovery, being able to research different, you know, historical cases or filings, being able to file all of your, whether it's patent applications or, you know, motions and dismissals and things like that. All of this can be done now electronically. So the biggest challenge in adopting that is the adoption itself, is really explaining and having these law firms who are so used to the way it's been done for so long, just being able to change them. And to what your point earlier, to be change adverse is something that's innate and just natural for a lot of these law firms. But if you can provide that value and really show it and represent great examples on how you've helped other firms in the past, again, you start to see more and more firms adopt it. But if you can get over that adoption and that fear of change, we like to call it, right? Then they come back to you and they're just so thankful, and you just feel really good about helping a law firm out. It's really that consultative approach. I always think that's the most important thing in any industry you're selling in, whether you're selling cars or software or houses. You want to know the industry you're in and what you're selling. And that's really the biggest thing behind how I like to approach these things.
And for listeners out there, I know we talked about the legal space and change management, but this is something that affects a whole lot of industries, let alone the legal space. Yes, the legal space, they have a lot of big law firms that are a little bit behind when it comes to adopting technology, but a lot of the points that Sam, you're raising affect a lot of different industries. And I'm glad you're mentioning this, because there's a lot of parallels that can be drawn into different industries that face the same challenges and consequences as a result.
Exactly. There's no question behind that. I mean, again, it's just a technology-driven world now. You know, every piece of every industry is somehow related back to technology, and it's really for the good aspect of it, right? This technology is driving the business to do more and less time. Again, like you're saying, whether you're a law firm, a doctor's office, a car leasing place, you know, any type of industry is really adopting technology in one way or another. So it's really important not to get left behind.
Right. The COVID-19 pandemic forced law firms and in-house legal teams to adopt technology at a more rapid pace than they otherwise would have, just like we've talked about earlier in this episode. How have mm-hmm. companies such as Practice Panther played a role in helping ease this transition for the law firms?
Yeah. So, you know, we talked about a little bit earlier how I really believe that this market penetration was coming, whether, you know, you were seeing it or not, but the unfortunate pandemic really sped that up and made it happen at a much more rapid pace, like you're saying. So I think tools like Practice Panther, and again, this could relate to any type of industry, but right, specifically to the legal industry, I think tools like Practice Panther, you know, showed and really opened the eyes of these law firms to see, well, now I have to work from home, but my paralegal is in a different, you know, location, maybe a different zip code. Having the technology behind it and being able to communicate via the program, whether it's an internal message or being able to do billing and having the paralegal review it from their space without having to come to my physical office, being able to, again, bill from home, have a lot of these automation features, get things electronically signed. If Fred takes me on as a client to be one of his, you know, podcast participants, and I need to sign something, he can now send me an electronic document for me to sign. I don't have to go through, you know, going to the office, printing it out, signing it, handing him, making copies. So these are just a few of the big tools that allowed people to succeed in the unfortunate pandemic that we were experiencing. And, you know, a lot of us still are, unfortunately.
Right. And last question, this is one thing that I like asking all my guests, because different people come from different backgrounds, different challenges that they faced, some of the lessons learned. What has helped you get to where you are today? And what word of advice would you give to someone that wants to pursue a career that's identical to yours?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, like you're asking me, I've asked that to people in the past. And I think the biggest thing for me personally has just been the continuous persistence and approaching everything I do with a lot of confidence. Because if you believe in yourself first and you take that consultative approach like we were talking about to everything you do, for example, researching your industry, you know, you're not just selling something to make a paycheck month to month. You want to sell it, again, being a consultative approach, understanding the industry, the surroundings, gathering that insight, understanding where your industry is now, where it might be headed before the next person does, is always going to give you, you know, that leg up. But something that's also super important to me, and we kind of started talking about this when I had mentioned my grandfather earlier, is in addition to everything within the industry and understanding, you know, your profession and whatnot, is just being a kind person, not only caring about your clients that you're selling to, but the people you're working with. So if you are in the position or you have the opportunity to maybe coach and mentor and lead those around you so that your high tide can lift all boats around you, right, I think that's the biggest thing, and just the most happy that it makes me when I'm able to do that. You know, my grandfather always used to say, think with your mind and with your heart. And that's kind of the mindset I always like to approach situations with.
Sam, this has been very fascinating. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today.
Of course, Fred. I really appreciate it. You guys do an awesome job. And I'm just, you know, so honored and privileged to be able to speak with you here.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of Ivy Podcast. Please take a moment to rate, review, and subscribe on your preferred podcast listening platform. We really appreciate that effort. Until next time.